United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William S. Greenberg presiding. God bless the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning. This is Judge Greenberg. I'm joined by Judges Meredith and Scholin. Today we will hear arguments via teleconference in the matter of Dahlman versus the Secretary, case number 184075. Will counsel enter their appearances, beginning with appellant's counsel?
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Ethan Marin of Lieberman & Mark. With me at counsel table is Jeannie Mark, also of the firm.
You wish to reserve any time for a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 10 minutes, please.
Thank you. Counsel for the Secretary.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is Melissa Timbers arguing on behalf of the Secretary, and with me on the call is Megan Krall.
Thank you. You may begin arguing for the appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Board's determination that the December 1999 grading decision became final precludes the assignment of an effective date for service connection for right thigh hematoma based upon Mr. Dahlman's original claim of April 1999. Because the Board's determination that this decision became final was erroneous, Mr. Dahlman submitted a timely and formal NOD in January 2000. He respectfully urges the Court to reverse the Board's finality determination and dismiss the matter of entitlement to reopening as unnecessary since the decision did not, in fact, become final. The Board's determination that the rating decision became final precludes the assignment of an effective date based upon the original claim because VA's regulations specifically direct this outcome. The provisions of 38 CFR 3.400 stipulate that the effective date for service connection in a claim reopened due to the receipt of new and material evidence is no earlier than the date of receipt of the claim for reopening. The language of this regulation is unambiguous and admits of no discretion by the agency. Because the Board unnecessarily reopened this claim, but did in fact reopen it, this portion of the Board's decision has a preclusive effect upon the assignment of an effective date based upon the original claim. The issue here is not the erroneous assignment of an effective date for service connection. As the Secretary noted, this is not yet before the Court. Rather, the issue is that the Board's decision has this preclusive effect upon the earliest possible effective date. In that regard, the facts of this case are similar to those from the Court's recent decision in Philbrook v. Wilkie. In that case, the veteran had appealed the Board's denial of TDIU through the Court, and TDIU was subsequently granted in a later claim. Before this Court, the Secretary argued that the veteran's appeal had become moot. And the court held that the appeal was not moot because even though the veteran retained the ability to appeal the effective date assigned for TDIU, the Board's denial of TDIU in the earlier claim had a preclusive effect on the assignment of the earliest possible effective date, and therefore the Board's denial was not, in fact, moot. That preclusive effect suffice to create the Board's jurisdiction. This is precisely the harm that the Board's error inflicted upon Mr. Dahlman here. And, in fact, the Board was mistaken. Following the December 1999 grading decision, the veteran submitted a January 2000 informal NOD informal in the sense that it was not written on VA's specified form, that was frankly a model of clarity. It specifically referenced the December 1999 rating decision, which had only adjudicated the right thigh hematoma issue. It referenced the heading of that decision and stated that the veteran wished to appeal.
I'm sorry, this is Judge Scholin, if I could interrupt. I don't think the court is going to engage in whether the 2000 document is or is not an NOD at this juncture. Perhaps we would, I don't know. But I would like to ask a question about the case Myers. Are you familiar with that case?
Yes, sure.
Myers v. Principe. In that case, it seemed a similar circumstance to what we have here in that the board reopened and then sent it back down, and then the appellant was unhappy with the effective date, asserting that they had an earlier claim pending, and the court agreed that they could challenge that effective date determination that way. And my understanding is that's what you have done, that you have appealed the effective date assigned, yes?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why does Myers not address this situation? Why do we have to make a decision in your case that would be different?
Because Myers did not address the question of the preclusive effect of the board's reopening determination. It could have, because the procedural posture was, in fact, similar to that in the instant case, but it did not.
By implication, find that there is no preclusive effect by arguing that or by deciding that Mr. Myers could go ahead with his effective date appeal? So he was not precluded.
No, Your Honor. Myers did not. Our position is that Myers did not implicitly reach this question because it was not raised before the court The court's decision did not reach that point, and the regulatory language in 38 CFR 3.400 is unambiguous. The court could have reached this question. It could have addressed the preclusive effect of the board's reopening determination, but it simply didn't get there. Myers was decided instead. I'm sorry.
This is Judge Merritt. Judge Scholin, may I jump in?
Of course.
Assuming that Myers is not controlling, I wanted to ask you whether you're familiar with a case called Acosta v. Principe. It's a 2004 case from the court.
Acosta v. Principe. I don't believe so, Your Honor.
So in that case, the court made two conclusions that may be relevant here. The court found that a board decision that found new material evidence had been submitted and then remanded the reopened claim. Court said that was not a final decision, even though it addressed whether an old RO decision had become final. And the court also held that after service connection was awarded, the veteran in seeking an earlier effective date could still challenge whether that old RO decision became final. So even if there are distinctions in Myers, is Acosta not controlling right here, or at least persuasive in its logic?
There are, begging the court's brief indulgence.
This is Judge Greenberg. We can't see what you're doing. If you'd like to have a moment to consult your notes or co-counsel, just say so. We'll be happy to give you that opportunity.
I apologize, Your Honor. Thank you. May I have a moment?
Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Your Honors. Acosta differs from the instant case in a couple of important regards. First, this was not an appeal of the board's reopening decision. It was an appeal of the board's denial in a subsequent decision of entitlement to an earlier effective date for service connection. And as in Myers, it appears that the court did not address the question that is before it in this case, which is specifically whether the provisions of 38 CFR 3.400 are triggered by the board's decision to reopen a claim based upon the receipt of new and material evidence. That's the issue here, Your Honors, that although Acosta could have reached this question, it did not, just as Myers did not reach that question of whether 38 CFR 3.400 is triggered once the board has granted reopening of the purportedly previously denied claim. With regard to the persuasive authority of Acosta or Myers, our position is that their persuasive authority on this question is minimal, because the regulations promulgated by the secretary are clear and unambiguous. The regulatory language stipulates that if a claim is reopened, as the board did in the instant appeal, the effective date can be no earlier than the claim for reopening. Given this clear regulatory language and earlier decisions from the court which do not squarely address that language, we don't believe that Acosta or Myers are either binding, either control this case or have persuasive effect in this case.
I'm sorry, please go ahead,
Judge Holm.
I am struck, though, by cases like DiCarlo and cases that followed on from there. I could probably find hundreds where we've cited to DiCarlo, where we say, if you believe that you have a pending unadjudicated claim, that the answer is to go back to the regional office and have that be adjudicated, and that this court isn't going to get into the question of effective date when service connection has not yet been established. We would be engaging in an advisory issue, because effective date could be irrelevant if service connection were never granted. How do you respond to that line of cases?
Your Honor, Mr. Dahlman does not seek an advisory opinion. In this case, there is not a hypothetical issue as to whether VA has found there was no timely NOD. The board decision on appeal from 2018 expressly stated that the December 1999 rating decision had become final because no timely NOD had been filed, and because no new and material evidence had been submitted during the appellate period. That's the distinction, Your Honor, from DiCarlo and its progeny. This is the fact that this is simply a determination by the board, which it actually, not hypothetically or even implicitly, but explicitly made alongside all the other determinations, factual and legal determinations in the instant appeal. Moreover, it is difficult to imagine how the board could have avoided reaching this determination. Reopening of a claim is only available if, in fact, a prior determination became final. The Federal Circuit in Jackson v. Principe held that when the board assesses entitlement to reopening of a previously denied claim, that assessment encompasses all the jurisdictional prerequisites to a grant of service connection for the previously denied claim. The finality of a prior rating decision is certainly one of those prerequisites. In other words, Your Honor, this case is different from DiCarlo because the presence of a timely NOD was a question that the board had to address and, in fact, did address and did, in fact, adjudicate. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you. I do have an additional question, though. Actually, I'll hold it in abeyance. If one of my colleagues wants to go, I'll wait.
This is Judge Meredith. The board in the decision on appeal did say that the 1999 RO decision was final, but did the appellant argue below that it was not? And did the appellant argue anything about the January 2000 statement and whether it was an NOD? And so if those arguments weren't made and they weren't addressed by the board, why would there be a preclusive effect from arguing that later?
Your Honor, the preclusive effect from the board's determination flows from the fact that the board did make a determination. This is analogous to any other determination that the board might make. For example, if the board had denied service connection for disability X, it would not avail the veteran subsequently to come to the board or the court and say the board's determination wasn't final because we have a new theory for disability X. This is the same matter. The board did, in fact, adjudicate the finality of the 99 decision, and the board expressly found that no timely NOD had been filed. Moreover, although this issue, whether or not the January 2000 document was an NOD, this was not argued before the agency. However, the board has a statutory obligation to review the entirety of the record before it, and this court in Robinson held that issues, that arguments are before the board, raised before the board, if raised by arguments or reasonably raised by the record. In this case, the January 2000 NOD was crystal clear as to its intention. Was there a question, or I thought I heard? And that clarity reasonably raised the question of whether that document constituted a timely NOD. The key point, Your Honor, though, is that the board did, in fact, determine there was no timely NOD, and that determination, because the board made it expressly, is binding upon the end. I'm sorry, Your Honors. Does that answer the question, or should I continue?
This is Judge Meredith. So are you taking the position that, contrary to or despite Acosta, Myers, and other cases, the appellant at the effective date stage cannot raise whether there was a pending claim in the past?
The appellant cannot prevail on that point because the board expressly found that the December 1999 rating decision had become final. That is our position, Your Honor. Now, of course, we have appealed the effective date for this decision because if we had not appealed it pending a decision from this court, the appellate period would have expired. And we have raised this argument below because it is the best argument that we have available. and we do not yet know the outcome of the instant appeal before this court. Nonetheless, given the board's clear, unambiguous finding on a question squarely before it, did the 99 decision become final? Our position is that VA is bound by that determination, just as it would be bound by any other board determination that had not been appealed. And just as new arguments wouldn't avail us if we had not appealed the board's denial of an increased rating for cancer residuals, they cannot avail us if, with regard to the board's finding that the 99 decision became final.
All right, counsel, we'll hear the rest of your argument on rebuttal. Counsel for the secretary.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Secretary submits that this court should dismiss appellant's appeal of the right thigh hematoma because its arguments concerning the finality of the December 1999 ring decision are not ripe for review. Dismissal of this appeal is proper for three reasons. First, appellant fails to show how he has been prejudiced. Second, appellant has not established that this court has jurisdiction over his arguments concerning the finality of the 1999 ring decision. And third, the court should reject appellant's arguments because he failed to raise them below. Turning to our first point, Your Honors, appellant has failed to establish that he is prejudiced by the board's favorable determination to reopen his claim for service connection. Here, the only claim the board properly had jurisdiction to consider was whether appellant submitted new and material evidence sufficient to reopen his claim for service connection. The board issued a final decision on this matter, a final decision which is entirely favorable to appellant because it granted his request to reopen. Importantly, because the board's jurisdiction was limited to a determination of whether new and material evidence had been submitted, the board had no authority to issue any pronouncement that might affect any downstream element of service connection. Thus, the board's description of the 1999 ring decision as final was not a legal holding, but rather a description of the claim stream that brought the matters on appeal within its jurisdiction. In any view, the board statement has no preclusive effect below on the issue of an effective date. Just as the board had no jurisdiction over the effective date, it had no authority to issue any pronouncement that might affect that issue. It's worth emphasizing that appellant has since filed an appeal with the board challenging the effective date for the award of service connection. That appellant has done so demonstrates that he has not been prejudiced by the board's favorable determination to reopen his claim. Although appellant argues that the board's reopening has prejudiced him, he has yet to identify any precedential authority or rule which explicitly states that he will be precluded from challenging the finality of the 1999 rate decision as part of his claim for an earlier effective date. In fact, and as the secretary in this court has recognized, appellant remains free to argue this before the board below. This is the exact scenario which played out in Myers v. Principi. Therefore, based on this court's precedential decision in Myers, appellant would not be precluded from challenging the finality of the 1999 ring decision if raised in the appropriate context. As such, appellant fails to show how he has been prejudiced. Turning to our second point, appellant has not met his burden of establishing that this court has jurisdiction over his arguments concerning the finality of the 1999 ring decision. After favorably deciding appellant's claim to reopen, the board properly remanded the claim for the RO to make an initial determination as to whether service connection was warranted, and if so, to assign the proper effective date. Thus, because appellant's claim for service connection had not yet been granted, the question of the appropriate effective date of a claim was not ripe for determination, and therefore any question regarding whether there remained a pending claim was not finally decided in the April 2018 decision. Appellant's reading of Hickson to create an independent pathway for this court to exercise jurisdiction of the downstream issue of an effective date is fundamentally flawed. First, it should be emphasized that appellant's interpretation of Hickson is contrary to precedential case law, which explains that the assignment of an effective date is a downstream element which should be addressed after the benefit has been awarded. Second, Hickson explains that there are two separate inquiries as part of a claim to reopen based on new material evidence. The first inquiry is whether new material evidence has been submitted sufficient to reopen the claim, and the second inquiry involves the adjudication of entitlement to service connection. As appellant has pointed out, both of these determinations are subject to one review. But here, the board favorably answered the first inquiry, finding that new and material evidence had been submitted and then correctly remanded the adjudication of service connection to the RO. Thus, Thus, because the board's final decision here was favorable to appellant, the court may not disturb the board's determination that reopening was warranted. Finally, Your Honors, it's important to emphasize that appellant, with the assistance of his current counsel, acquiesced to the scope of this claim as out of one to reopen based on new and material evidence. This fact is important because if appellant believes, as he now asserts, that the December 1999 ring decision did not become final, then DiCarlo dictates that the proper procedure would be for him to raise this below to the RO. Had appellant done so and properly pursued an appeal of that issue, then this court would have jurisdiction over the question of finality. But appellant did not raise that issue below. Although represented by current counsel at that time, appellant did not dispute the characterization of his claim as one to reopen based on new material evidence. Appellant also never asserted at any time during the appeal process a belief that the 1999 ring decision remained pending. Instead, appellant and his current counsel proceeded with the claim as one to reopen based on new material evidence. For this reason, the court should decline to address appellant's arguments concerning the finality of the 1999 ring decision. In closing, Your Honors, it's worth emphasizing that even though appellant failed to raise any argument below challenging the finality of the 1999 ring decision, he is not without recourse. As part of his pending claim for an earlier effective date, appellant has argued that the January 2000 letter was a valid NOD, and the AOJ has rendered an independent determination on that issue in the April 2020 SOC. This SOC has since been appealed to the board.
Counsel, this is Judge Sholin. I have a question. You argue that the appellant is not prejudiced and wouldn't be precluded from arguing this. The appellant has, in one of their supplemental authorities or SOLZE notices, has alerted us to a board decision in a different veterans case where the court did exactly what he is fearful of happening in his case by saying that the board decided in an earlier proceeding that the veteran had submitted no material evidence and that the prior claim was final and that there is res judicata and the board is bound by that. How do you respond to that?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position is that appellant's reliance on this board decision is misplaced for a few reasons. First being that one board decision is not binding on another. So this particular decision provides no insight into how the board would treat appellant's appeal. Also, the March 2020 decision that appellant attaches to his SOLZE notice provides insufficient information for appellant to even draw the conclusion that he does. The board in the March 2020 decision refers to a prior August 2016 decision, which was not attached to appellant's SOLZE notice. It could very well be possible that in that August 2016 decision, the issue of finality of the prior rating decision was raised. In that case, the issue would have been adjudicated. But it's also worth emphasizing that if that argument had not been raised, then the board's decision would have been wrong to have denied it based on res judicata.
This is Judge Meredith. I wanted to ask you whether if you are familiar with the Acosta case that I was discussing with the appellant's counsel and whether that case suggests that the appellant here cannot appeal the 2008 board remand, but can argue later in contesting the effective date that the 1999 RO decision is not final.
Yes, Your Honor. To be frank, I am not familiar with the specific facts of that case, but our position on that case and Myers is that they're persuasive in to the effect that they would allow the appellant here to raise the issue or to challenge the finality of the 1999 ring decision as part of his appeal of the earlier effective date claim.
I have one other question on a slightly different topic. In the appellant's motion for panel review, he said that he was challenging only the single judge decision to the extent that it dismissed as to the finality issue. What is VA's position on whether the panel should leave intact the remainder of that single judge decision that remanded some higher disability ratings and an earlier effective date?
Your Honor, Honor, we do not challenge any portion of the prior memorandum decision. Our only dispute with appellant remains that we do not believe that the issue of the 1999 Ray decision is ripe for review, and therefore it's outside of this court's jurisdiction.
Thank you. This is Judge Shulman. I have a question about the appellant's argument about the lack of a final adverse board decision. Their point, you're framing this in the context of that there's no decision about an effective date, so we can't decide effective date. And they're framing it as there is a final decision as to that his 2000 NOD was not valid, and therefore the 1999 claim is final. How do we resolve which is the right construction of the question?
Yes, Your Honor. The Secretary's position is that finality was not a final determination as part of the April 2018 decision. And if you look at the board's decision, it makes no legal conclusion or holding on whether or not the prior Ray decision became final. The only legal holding it makes is that new material evidence had been submitted to reopen the claim. And also, it's worth emphasizing that the scope of a new material evidence claim is premised on the fact that there was a prior final denial. So here, all the board had to do was determine whether or not new material evidence had been submitted, and here it decided yes, and so it's a favorable determination.
So you're disputing his assertion that, I'm sorry, this is Judge Shulman again, that the appellant, I'm sorry, there was a very large mosquito near my face. I just got distracted. The appellant's assertion regarding the decision that he had presented new material evidence necessarily resulted from a decision by the board that the prior case was final. You're saying the board didn't even get to that. It's sort of like if somebody is arguing about rating increase for a specific period, they don't look at the period before that.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, our ultimate.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
A little bit. I guess our ultimate conclusion or position is that there's no final determination in the 2018 decision that says the prior rating decision became final.
So when the board said it was final, it wasn't actually making a decision?
Correct. The board's discussion of the prior rating decision was just a statement as to how the appeal stream came before it. It wasn't issuing a legal holding. It was just describing the facts that were present that allowed this claim to come before the board.
Thank you.
Anything else, counsel?
Nope. Your Honor, if there are no further questions, the Secretary respectfully requests that this court instruct appellant to pursue avenues of recourse below and dismiss this portion of the appeal for lack of jurisdiction. Thank you.
Anything else from Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Anything from Judge Shulman?
No, thank you.
All right. Appellant's counsel, proceed with your rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. As Judge Shulman noted, the board certainly reached a determination on finality. This determination can be found at page 5 of the record before the agency. Service connection was denied by the RO in December 1999. The veteran was notified of this action in his appellate rights, but did not file a timely appeal or submit new material evidence within 1 year of notification of the decision. This certainly looks and sounds and in every way appears to be a determination made by the board. Mr. Dahlman's position is that that's because this was a determination by the board. Moreover, the secretary's position, if we understand it correctly, is that the board didn't make a determination on finality. If the board did not, who did? If no one made such a determination, why was reopening before the board in the first place? Forgive me, Your Honors, I don't mean to sound glib, but that question that of whether the board made this determination is straightforward. It did. It clearly appears that it did. And the Federal Circuit's holding in Jackson v. Principe establishes that the board had to reach this determination. Just as in Jackson, to briefly reiterate those facts, even though the regional office had determined that reopening was warranted, the board still had the jurisdictional obligation to review whether new and material evidence had been submitted before reaching the substance of the claim. One moment. Moreover, when the secretary asserted that the regional office had assigned an effective date for service connection independently of the board, that is simply not so. On review of the rating decision, clearly states that the effective date of this grant is made effective December 22nd, 2010, the date your reopened claim was received. So this review is clearly based upon the board's reopening determination. And Jackson, as well as 38 CFR 20.201, clearly established that these jurisdictional questions, whether reopening was before the board, whether new and material evidence had been submitted to warrant reopening, these were squarely before the board. Unless I misunderstood the secretary's position, I do not believe the secretary articulated a mechanism through which 38 CFR 3.400 could not have been triggered by the board's determination. And that is the heart of this matter, Your Honor. The board reopened. This reopening, by triggering the effective date provisions of 38 CFR 3.400 UNR, precludes the assignment of an effective date based upon the veteran's original claim, and therein lies the prejudice. I would also note, Your Honors, with regard to the board decision we submitted, first, it's certainly not our position that any board decision is binding upon VA. It plainly isn't, aside from that particular veteran's case. Rather, this was submitted as an example of the outcome that we believe 38 CFR 3.400 directs. To be clear, we think the board got that discussion right. There's one more crucial nuance that we need to emphasize, which is the secretary talked about whether an argument about finality had been raised below, in this case or in the board case that we submitted to VA. Arguments about the finality of the previous rating decision have no effect on the board's jurisdiction to assess that question. They can assess the issues that the board must review in assessing finality. They can change how the board assesses finality, but that jurisdictional question has nothing to do with the arguments raised by the parties. In this case, and the clue is that in both the board decision we submitted, the decision on appeal, and every reopening case I'm familiar with, the board, in fact, reaches a determination on finality. In the instant appeal, although
no arguments on finality were raised below. The presence of a timely NOD was squarely raised by the record. Specifically, the January 2000 document, which the board had a statutory obligation to review, in which the veteran stated, "I wish to appeal your decision of December 1999, and clearly referenced that decision. May I beg the court's brief indulgence?
Yes.
Thank you,
brief.
Your Honor. Your Honors, thank you very much for the court's time and for the opportunity to argue these matters today. I would just emphasize that because of the operation of 38 CFR 3.400 triggered by the board's reopening determination, this is in fact the veteran's last opportunity for review of the finality of the December 1999 decision. For the reasons set forth today and in our briefs, we believe that determination was clearly erroneous, and we urge the board to reverse.
If I may interject, this is Judge Sholin. If I know you don't read it this way, but pretend that you do, that Myers says that 3.400 will not be a bar to your appellant receiving the full effective date that you believe he is entitled to. Under Myers, the court has held that he can appeal the effective date. So how can you assert that it is the final opportunity for the veteran to challenge this?
Your Honor, Myers has decided on a very different legal theory than what's involved in this case. In Myers, essentially, the board concluded that subsequent regional office decisions following the veteran's NOD, subsequent rating decisions had become final, and this precluded the assignment of an earlier effective date. The Myers court held that, in fact, once a document is placed on, once an NOD has been filed, the regional office can't remove that from appellate status. This case is different from Myers because here the board, not the regional office, expressly determined that there was not a timely NOD. Moreover, Your Honor, that being said, Your Honor, we certainly do like your proposed reading of Myers. In candor, the rule, that interpretation of Myers would certainly be better for the veteran pursuing these issues in front of the agency is much less burdensome than taking them to the court. The only reason we are taking the position that we do take in this case is that we don't see a way to reach that position. We believe that the language of 38 CFR 3.400 U and R is clear and unambiguous. We further believe it is quite explicit, and we further that Myers did not reach this regulatory language. Now, if the court disagrees with our position, frankly, that we're perfectly happy with the rule saying that we're wrong. But we would urge the court to clearly articulate a rule stating and explaining why we're mistaken. Myers doesn't see that. Acosta doesn't see that. So if that is the conclusion the court reaches, we would urge the court to state so clearly and unambiguously, because at present, we don't see a way to get there with the current regulatory language. Unless there are any further questions from the bench, I see my time has expired. And again, I thank the court for its time.
Anything, Judge Meredith?
No, thank you.
Anything else, Judge Sholin?
No, thank you.
Well, we thank counsel for your excellent presentations in writing and before the court today. The matter is submitted.
The court is now in recess.